just like that, you found us. My name is Ken, and I'm joined by my son, William. Welcome to our journey as we discuss music, life, and our shared love of coffee. This is Studio 36.
I think we're overdue to stick it to the man and have a little fun.
How so?
So we're not necessarily going to do that right now, but I think that we need to make that commitment to get our next coffee trip on the calendar and maybe set aside some of our responsibilities just for a few hours and go enjoy ourselves doing that.
Yeah.
But before we get into all that, why don't you go ahead and share with me a little bit about how your week went?
In full honesty, I had a pretty rough week at work, and you know, I was kind of going into the weekend, not really dreading it, but like at a low point, I guess I would say. I just, you know, I really just wanted to stay in bed. I didn't really want to get up. But I ended up getting to speak with my, well, not speak with, but pretty much the whole day. My friend who's off at college just kind of sat on FaceTime with me, and we got to pretty much spend the day together, I guess you could say. It turned around my week, I guess I would say, right at the end point. You know, it's been a little while since we've been able to do that, and that was really nice.
What made it special?
Well, the fact that, like, we didn't necessarily even have to be talking to each other the whole time. We could just kind of coexist on FaceTime, right. I guess.
Truth be told, when I first started dating your mother, there were a few nights there where we would be on the phone and fall asleep and then wake up, right? Wake up and we're still on the phone. And it was pretty funny to do that.
It must have been quite the phone bill.
Well, it wasn't long distance.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. It wasn't like we lived in different states or anything. So, but it was fun just to know that there was another, you know, another human on the other end.
Yeah.
And that closeness. And so we've had many good conversations during those dating years when we were doing that.
Yeah.
So moving on to my week, it's been an extra busy week for me at work, but really satisfying because I was really just closing the loop on a few projects and tasks that I've been working on. And there's just something really satisfying about wrapping up a project.
Uh-huh.
And from that, I learned that my days are much more satisfying when I'm able to wrap up things I'm working on, whether they're at home or at work. And I was wondering, well, how can I increase the frequency on how to make that happen? And I've come up with a few strategies.
I think I got a strategy off the top of my head.
Okay, you share your strategy because okay. I have three.
Well, I've already been using it, but you divide up your main goal into little sub-goals. Now you're accomplishing little smaller bits of a project, where you still get that satisfaction, but you might not be completing the whole project, which might be too much for one day. Or
I like that because it's not only accomplishing the smaller goal, but you're also accomplishing a smaller goal that is on the way to a larger goal.
Mm-hmm.
And so no, that's a great strategy for that. For me, I have one that's similar to that, but for me, the number one strategy is to not procrastinate. Really take that step to identify the next step and then do it.
Yeah.
So it doesn't have to be all the steps, just what's the next step? And let's take that next step. So that's the first one. The second strategy is to have smaller side hustle projects to buffer out the longer term ones. So I have a few big projects. They take a long time and they do have milestones too. But, you know, what if I had smaller projects where I can get that satisfaction of wrapping up that project and having that feeling of success along the way? So I don't have to wait, you know, days, weeks, months out before I get that satisfaction of wrapping up a project. The third is that I think it's important not to just have small goals for the purpose of accomplishing them, but I think that those tasks or that busy work needs to have a purpose. And in that end result of whatever I'm trying to accomplish enriches my personal life or my work life or both. So this week, though, and this all is part of what I wanted to talk about, I wanted to extend our discussion on moments of feeling alive. I thought that was a really good discussion we had last week. And I want to talk about it in its relationship with having fun. And we're talking about real fun, not just, hey, I had fun last night, but real fun. And sticking it to the man, you know, which is kind of all ties together. You know, sticking it to the man, it's not a gender thing, nor is it a license to not be accountable. It's really a concept to break the norm and maybe sidestep some of the day-to-day rituals and responsibilities that we have.
Uh-huh.
So, for example, I used to stick it to the man every summer. There was a day that me and a few of my friends at work, we would call it Sticking It to the Man Day. Now, first, I should say that was inspired by my brother, because there was a time several years ago where I called your Uncle Kevin, and I think it was, you know, it was probably a Tuesday or Wednesday, like 10:30 in the morning, and I called him up, and he clearly wasn't working. And I'm like, what are you doing? I mean, it's a work day. And he goes, I'm sticking it to the man. And he was just having a good time. And I think he probably had that that morning off. But I thought that was pretty funny. And so I go on this baseball trip. I call it a trip. We just take the train down to Seattle. And we watch the Mariners on one of their summertime midday games. You know, we call it sticking it to the man, because, you know, what would we normally be doing on a, you know, Wednesday afternoon? Well, we'd be working. And so this was a day we wouldn't actually be sticking it to the man, right? We took the day off and had some personal time. But it's a lot of fun to just kind of break that day-to-day pattern. And I think that really then transitions into fun. It transitions into what it means to have fun.
Uh-huh.
And so anyways, that was an example of us having fun. And it got me thinking about, well, what does it mean to have fun? So I don't know. I'm going to throw that question to you before I talk a little bit about it. But can you think of a time when you truly had fun? Now, not just trivial activities where you might say, well, that was fun. I'm talking about that visceral feeling of fun where you lose track of time and you have deep connections with the people you're around. Do you have some thoughts on what that feels like, and maybe an example?
Yeah. I mean, the friend group that I bring up pretty regularly on this podcast, there was a summer where it was just a smaller part of us. We only had like 5 people there, I think, out of, you know, like the normal 8 or 9 people there in our friend group. And we were at the lake just having a good day. You know, we didn't really pay attention to anything other than just being there. None of us were really sitting on our phones or anything.
So like losing track of time and I think that's a key point, not sitting on your phones. As I mentioned, this whole concept of having fun was on my mind this week, and it's relationship to feeling alive, like we talked about last week.
Uh-huh.
And I watched this TED Talk. It was called Why Having Fun is the Secret to a Healthier Life, and it was by Catherine Price. And I really liked how she broke down some of the concepts of having fun and what having fun meant, because I think it ties really strong into what we talked about, that feeling of being alive last week, and a little bit about sticking it to the man. So what she proposed was that, first of all, fun is a feeling, not an activity. And fun is energizing. It makes us present. It unites us. It makes us healthier. And fun just simply is joyful. And she structured the 3 conditions of fun in a Venn diagram. Now, you know what a Venn diagram is?
Yeah.
Okay, so my favorite Venn diagram actually isn't three circles. It's 2 circles where they overlap.
Uh-huh.
And there's on one side with you and without you. And the space in between is where Bono can't live. And so I thought that was a pretty fun Venn diagram. I always wanted a t-shirt of that to wear to a U2 concert. But anyways,
yeah.
I digress. So the Venn diagram of where the circles meet and where fun exists. So according to her, it contains playfulness. For the sake of having fun, without any particular outcome in mind, having a connection and a special shared experience. And then the third one I thought was interesting, which is having flow. That's one way to say it, but it's being so engaged and so focused that we lose track of time. And so she suggests that, well, how do we create fun? And fun's not like something you just go schedule. You know, I'm going to have fun from 2 to 3 tomorrow. But what you can do is you can cue up the ingredients that maybe would increase your chances of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so one of those, as you mentioned earlier, was removing distractions. Then the next ingredient is increasing that human connection. So getting with humans, right? Getting with people, and not just on the phone or not just on text or on Zoom, but getting with people face to face. The other ingredient is to increase playfulness. And this is about breaking the responsibilities of adult life. And that's why I brought up sticking it to the man, because that's really what you're doing.
Uh-huh.
You're still accountable, but you're putting on pause your responsibilities and just your day-to-day rituals that you have. And then the last is to prioritize it. Treat fun as an important thing in your life, because it is.
Uh-huh.
So there you have it. Back to my request at the top of the segment. Let's get sticking it to the man coffee trip back on the calendar and have a little fun on that journey.
All right.
Well, with that, I think it's time we roll into this week's or last week's listening experience, and I think I'm going to kick it off this time.
All right.
So last week, you did challenge me. You gave me Food by MF Doom.
Yep, you got to say the part.
I have to, two M's?
Yep.
I have to do
No, you don't have to do two M's, just...
I thought I did it long enough. Okay, I'm one more shot at it.
Say, you can't say just food.
I said food.
Oh, I know. I'm just making sure that people know that.
Okay, I'm going to say it again. food.
That's funny. Perfect.
Okay, so by MF Doom, which was released in November of 2004 and was his fifth studio album. He was 33 at the time.
Uh-huh.
The genre is hip-hop, and... like I said, this, you know that genre is a little bit of a challenge for me, but I have learned that, again, when you listen to something over and over and over, you can establish some level of empathy for it.
Sounds like Stockholm Syndrome, but for music.
You know, it kind of is, but you need to do that to establish empathy. I don't think you can do it on the first couple listens.
No, that's fair.
Because you have to break through, because I think the first... at least the first couple listens for me, I know that I'm in that judger pit. You know, I know that I'm judging and not being open to learning and being curious about the music and what it brings to other people.
Uh-huh.
So anyways, about the artist, what I've learned about MF Doom, or sometimes referred to as just Doom, his name was Daniel Dumail.
Mm-hmm.
And he had other names, notably Zev Love X, when he was with an earlier band, KMD, Metal Fingers, and Metal Face, which, of course, is his supervillain metal mask that he wears, which I still think is kind of creepy, but but I got over that. He had 6 solo albums in a 10-year span from 99 to 09.
Mm-hmm.
And several collaborative albums. His first band was in 88. Again, as I mentioned, KMD. It disbanded in 93 with the death of his brother, DJ Sub Rock.
Yeah.
And who was also in the band. His brother was hit by a car while attempting to cross the Long Island expressways. He was only 20 years old. He was the younger brother. One thing I thought was interesting is during the last inauguration, on the playlist was one of his songs, Rap Snitch Knishes. Did I say that right?
I honestly don't know.
Is it Knishes or Knishes?
Usually I just say Rap Snitches.
Okay, so let's just call it Rap Snitches. Now, I will say, though, that they dropped all the words, thank goodness, because that couldn't be at an inauguration, but they played it as an instrumental.
Uh-huh.
And, but there was some controversy to that being on the inauguration playlist. because he was refused reentry into the United States in 2010 after a European tour. He thought he could come back because he had been in the States for so long, but he never became a naturalized citizen.
Yeah.
And so he was not able to come back after 2010. So there's a little bit of controversy with that that inauguration. And then I guess the only other real notable thing was that he did pass away on Halloween of 2020. Mm-hmm. He was 49 years old, and I'm not really sure if the cause was known or public.
I don't think it was.
So he's not with us anymore, but his music still is. So now a little bit about the album. As I mentioned, it's his fifth solo studio album of six. He described food. Did I get it right that time? As a concept album about all the things you find on a picnic table. And I thought that mm-hmm. was kind of funny, describing it that way. Referencing, of course, in his songs, many foods as metaphors or double entendres. And so that was basically how the album was set up, as a concept album. And so when you know the concept album, you know a little bit of the background, it makes it interesting when you get into the songs.
Yeah.
So a little bit about the songs. The first song, and I think it's the first one on the album, Beef Rap. Uh-huh. I don't know why, but I don't like the word beef. For whatever reason, I just don't like the word beef. But anyways, that's the name of the song. And but what I thought was really interesting about that song is that, you know, when you're at either Disneyland or some other theme park and you're in one of those lines that takes 2 or 3 hours, what they try to do in those amusement parks is they try to entertain you along the way.
Yeah.
And so as you're being entertained, there's all this noise and stuff going on and music and voices and all that. I felt like Beef Rap made me feel like I was standing in one of those lines because there was so much stuff playing through that song that it made me kind of think of that. And I thought that was interesting. The next song, Hoe Cakes, it also had some of that going on too. but what I like about that song is I like the backtrack of that descending melody that's in it. And it's either horns or it's electronic.
Uh-huh.
And then there's also some words in the background, a voice that continues to interject super, you know, and I thought that was kind of an interesting backtrack to that song.
So I really like how he works it into all of his lines.
Right. There's a lot of that going on in this album where there's the main singing portion, and then there's some background singing that's happening or words mm-hmm. or singing, whatever you want to call it. The next song that I found interesting was Potholders with a Z. I thought the opening was kind of funny because it was two different phrases, but it was said over and over. Hot shit, nah shit. So it was going hot shit, aw shit, hot shit, aw shit. You know, it kind of sounds the same and it keeps going over and over. But when you really get into the song, I think Potholders is about holding heat, a gun. And I think that's what that song is about, as in his lyric that says, some say the price of holding heat is often too high. You either got to be in a coffin or you got to be the new guy. And so I think that there was some insight there to that song. So, you know, his main message was don't forget your potholders. We already talked about rap snitches or rap snitch knishes or rap snitch niches, however you pronounce that song. Not a song that was in my original selection. Really due to the excessive language I couldn't relate or empathize with. But I was inspired to listen to it for the music, not the lyrics, because it was used in that inauguration. And I actually liked it from that perspective. So when I was able to remove the dialogue from the song, I thought that the music itself was really interesting. And it had a sample of, as you know, it had a sample of an artist that, you know, that I really like, Dave Matthews. And it was Dave Matthews' version of the Space Oddity from David Bowie. So it sampled that music in that song, and I thought that was interesting. I liked the song One Beer.
Yep.
I like the cadence and the melody as it changes through the song.
I love the drum part for that song.
Yeah, that was good too. You know, the thing I like about MF Doom is that you can make out the words in his songs, unlike some other rap artist or hip-hop artists. And he strings them really well together with metaphors and humor. So if you can get past his language, or sometimes where it's excessive language, it is enjoyable, because there's some humor put in there. And like I said, there's some metaphors, obviously with a conceptual album that takes place as well. But my pick for this album, I'm going to land on my last one here, Deep Fried Friends.
Huh.
I like the line, how many of us have them, friends? And and also in the lyrics, he says, I checked the dictionary for the meaning of friends. It said, a person who likes to socialize with, sympathizer, helper, and that's about the size of it. And I thought that was kind of fun that he actually pulled a dictionary definition right into the lyrics. So there you go. I got through the album. I enjoyed many parts of it, obviously, through those. How many did I share there? I have like 6 songs I like that.
Yeah.
Now, it was a long album, so 6 was 6 of many. So I'm going to hand it over to you now. I'm really excited to hear about your listening experience for the week, because it probably could not have been further across the musical spectrum from where I was at this week.
That's fair. So I'll get straight into it. The first song that I really enjoyed was The Story. I like how it opens up, and it's kind of quite the buildup. Well, as much as a buildup as Tristan Prettyman can have.
Right.
But you start with these slow, just down chords on the guitar.
Well, that's a good point to the buildup. There's not a lot of buildup for someone who's playing acoustic guitar on the sand.
Yeah. But, you know, about a minute in, it just kind of leads into this bit more upbeat, kind of simple song, and I enjoyed that. The next song that I really enjoyed was Shy That Way.
Yeah, with Jason Mraz.
Yeah, I would be lying if I said I didn't really like this song for Jason Mraz's part. I thought he did really good on this song, and I mean, they both do really well on this song, but I really enjoyed his part.
Right.
But for my pick, I have to go with Love, Love, Love.
Oh, that was a popular one.
Yep.
Yeah.
It was just upbeat and happy, which I really enjoyed.
That's what I like about Trista Prettyman, especially that album, is it just feels happy. It feels like, hey, we're just going to sit by a bonfire on the beach and pull out the acoustic guitar and just have some fun. As I mentioned before, similar to like a Jack Johnson style. One song that I'd encourage you to go look up, she did play a version of Toxic by Britney Spears, but she did it in her way, in acoustic, and it was pretty cool. You probably have to, I don't know if you'd find that on the music service, but I'm sure you could probably find it somewhere out there.
Mm-hmm.
So awesome. Anything else from that album?
No.
Okay, well then it looks like we're ready to roll into next week's listening experience. And once again, I think I'm going to get started on this and give you the album that you're going to listen to this next week.
All right.
Okay, so this week I have a band for you that was formed in Charlottesville, Virginia in 1991. They have horns, strings, bass, and drums, amongst other instruments. And their genre is a jam band, rock folk, roots rock, alternative, indie, that type of genre.
Huh.
The band is known for their live shows and playing songs differently with each performance. And they work songs with audiences before laying them down on their studio albums.
Interesting.
A little bit of the story of how the band formed. The lead singer befriended a lawyer while working as a bartender in 1990. And that person connected him with a local drummer. And the band has released over 100 albums, most of which are live, and sold over 33 million of them and played in front of millions of people. So I am talking about the Dave Matthews Band. I know you had the Dave Matthews solo album earlier in the year, but now we're going to walk a little bit into the Dave Matthews Band, and it was tough. I struggled with this one to find the album that I wanted to present to you, but had Dave Matthews on the mind. In last week's podcast, I talked a bit about my first Dave Matthews concert, which was really impressionable. The reason why I really struggled with it is because the, you know, they really, they just have the nine studio albums, and there's so much influence from the live albums on those studio albums that I love every one of them for different reasons, mainly the first ones when they had the full band there. The band has evolved as saxophonist Leroy Moore passed away in 2009. He had an ATV accident, and then there were complications about that. And what I enjoyed about when they would come to Washington is that they would always play at the Gorge on Labor Day weekend. They play three nights, Friday through Sunday. We would always, as a crowd, we'd always sing Happy Birthday to Leroy, because his birthday was on the 7th of September. So that was kind of a ritual thing that we would do when they came back to town. It's a venue they love. They did a live album from that location, but like I said, they've done many live albums from many locations. So back to my album selection. This week I'm going to give you their third studio album that was released in 1998, Before These Crowded Streets. This album was produced by Steve Lillywhite, who had produced other artists like U2 and the Rolling Stones and Fish, you know, some really good bands. He produced the first three albums, which are really my favorite albums. He produced Under the Table and Dreaming. He produced Crash, and then he produced Before These Crowded Streets, as you're going to get this week. I think that was before. So Every Day was after that. I think Glenn Ballard produced that, and then there were some other producers. I think Steve Lillywhite might have came back for a later album, though. The album was recorded at Plant Studio. We've talked about this studio before in California, because that's where Rumors by Fleetwood Mac was recorded. That's where Hotel California by the Eagles was recorded. This album debuted as number one on the Billboard 200, knocking the Titanic soundtrack from its 16 consecutive weeks at number one.
We listened to that last year.
So this is the album that took that one down. So
all right,
it was time to move on after 16 weeks, I guess, to another album. So a little bit about the songs. I really could get into all of the songs. I'm going to get into a few, definitely. One of my favorite opening songs, and it's also a common opener for live shows as well, but it sets the proper mood for enjoying the Dave Matthews Band, Pantala Naga Pampa. And I hope I said that right. And all these years I've listened to that song, and I'm not really sure if I'm even saying it right.
Yeah,
it's a short, it's about 40 seconds. It was originally known as What Will Become of Me. And again, remember that they really test songs live, and they work out however they want that song to develop, and it grows into its own thing. And then they sometimes put that on a studio album. It was believed to mean I have a snake in my pants. And if you see Dave Matthews dance, it's kind of a geeky, awkward, but cool kind of way of dancing. And I guess when I learned that that's what it meant, I thought about his dancing on stage. I don't know if it ties in with that, and probably doesn't, but it just made me think of that. But I love the setting of the mood that it creates with its lyrics, because the lyrics are pretty short, and it's really at the end of that instrumental. And they go, come and relax now, put your troubles down, no need to bear the weight of your worries here, let them all fall away. And I think that that's a great way to let the audience know, whether it's on a studio album or in a live setting, that, hey, we're going to put all those distractions away and we're just going to enjoy some time together. So I love that one. And then it commonly leads into Rapunzel, which is also another great song. Only one song on this album has never really grown on me. Which is kind of rare for Dave Matthews songs, but Halloween, it's just not my favorite. It's whether it's studio or live, it just doesn't resonate much with me. It's a bit much for me mid song. It actually starts to stress me out a little bit, which is strange for a Dave Matthews album, or Dave Matthews song rather. Crush, I love the simple song. I love the bass line that it starts with, and then the horns kind of come in. It has a great lounge feel to it. And the best version, live version that I witnessed, your mother and I went to a fundraiser. I think it was in the Paramount. Yeah, it was in the Paramount. And it was just him on the stage, and he played Crush, and it was just a great song. He uses the song starts with Crazy, and it really is a kind of a nod to Willie Nelson, mm-hmm. And of course he partners with Willie Nelson on the Farm Aid concerts, and so I like that one. Last week I shared one of my Feeling Alive moments. When Dave Matthews Band opened with Don't Drink the Water. I really like the song. It's a song about apartheid in South Africa, where Dave is from, but also the persecution of Native Americans. Another reason why I like that song, aside from the story or the purpose it has, is that it also features Alanis Morissette on backup vocals and Bella Fleck on banjo. And I think that's... That creates another dynamic when you bring in other artists for that type of song. So, but my pick, The Dreaming Tree, which, by the way, he has a wine called The Dreaming Tree. I like the storyline. Standing here, the old man said to me, long before these crowded streets, here stood my dreaming tree. Below it, he would sit for hours at a time. Now progress takes away what forever took to find. And I just think that the lyrics on this song is great. I like the pace of the song. So The Dreaming Tree is my pick from this album. And I'll probably just need to stop there because I can go on about each song as I mentioned. But why don't you go ahead and share with me what I'm going to listen to this week?
All right. So I'm giving you a band a quartet that I'm not too personally familiar with. But I will say, although this album was recorded all the way back in 1959, it is the most well-recorded album I've listened to. And that's part of the reason I'm giving it to you. So this comes from the Dave Brubeck Quartet, which is a jazz group. What I believe is our first lyricless album.
Interesting.
Yeah. So I don't know how to explain it, but just the sound staging in this album is something else. Like if you're listening to it with headphones and you close your eyes, you can truly picture where each instrument is. You know, you can like almost hear how the drums are orientated. You can visualize how the piano's there. And it's really well recorded. I'll put it that way.
The new just released last week. The new Red Hot Chili Peppers album has a couple of songs that does that really well.
Huh. But getting to the album, one thing that I do know about this album beyond the music and the recording itself is that it was Dave's attempt to try and make jazz like even more complicated, but ultimately that just made it more accessible. So he tried to introduce all these like complicated time signatures, which you'll definitely hear, but you know, it just kind of ended up becoming a very popular album, and Take Five is actually one of the most popular jazz songs out there.
How were you introduced to the band?
So I was trying to test out my headphones at one point, and I wanted to kind of feel how the soundstage was on these headphones, and I came across this album, and I kind of almost fell in love with it. I'll listen to this while I'm at work. I'll put it in my earbuds. It's something that you can do anything to, in my opinion.
So it's a little departure from MF Doom.
Yeah. So I'm only going to give you a couple of picks. So I've already mentioned this song, but Take Five. It's the most popular song off the album. But actually, my favorite song was the opening track, Blue Ronda A La Turque. It's a hard one to say, but I think it's just a great opening to the album.
Nice. I look forward to listening to it. And isn't it funny when these bands do, like, here I am trying to recite to you a song on a Dave Matthews album that I've listened to hundreds of times, and I probably still am not pronouncing it the right way. And I'm just like, why can't you just call the song Bob or something, you know, something I could pronounce. So No, I'm excited to listen to it. I think that's going to be a new experience for me, which I'm always excited about getting.
Yeah.
And so so this week, I'm giving you Before These Crowded Streets by Dave Matthews Band. And you're giving me
Time Out by the Dave Brubeck Quartet.
Perfect. We got a couple Daves going on this week.
All right.
Okay, we'll talk about it next week.
Sounds good.